Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. We're packed. Live in L.A., this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Oh, a week from today, we'll be on our second day in beautiful Miami. I have been scheduling cocktail parties and dinners in Miami, and I tell you, when you tell these celebrities that you don't have time for them, it gets very emotional.
Are you in high demand?
I had to turn down a lot of celebrities, and I said, listen, it's uncomfortable listening to a celebrity cry. But we are packed for all next week. We have a massive set. It's unbelievable, and Joy Taylor is joining me. I'm so excited for Miami.
I'm very excited. I'm going to get to see some family, a lot of old friends. I was there for 10 years. Are you going to wear, like, some tropical shirts?
Oh, yeah. That's who I am.
Because I have a whole Miami wardrobe plan, so get ready.
I bet you do. So let me start about this. I don't think it's terribly difficult to spot talent. You know, American Idol, remember that great show that was on Fox? It dominated TV, domestic TV, for about a decade. There's a reason they only gave people about 40 seconds to audition. That's about all you need. About 40 seconds, you can be lousy, lounge singer, could make a decent career out of it, or Carrie Underwood. It doesn't take much to figure it out. I mean, I'm not a big music guy. I sat there for years watching American Idol, and you can just spot it sometimes in 15 seconds. Sometimes, if they're awful, the first note. My wife used to be in the restaurant business, helped build some restaurants. She can walk into a restaurant, and I said this before. I've been with my wife almost 15 years. She'll walk into a restaurant, 90 seconds. She's like, big hit, big miss, moderate success. Never been wrong. That's what she knows. Every scout I know likes Jimmy Garoppolo. 50% of the fans are struggling with it. Folks, he got to a Super Bowl. He carried this team in the middle of the season when they fell apart physically. I'm not a stat guy. I'm an eye guy. Watch the games. But here's a stat for you. He is eighth in the NFL in passer rating. That's losing both of his offensive tackles this year, losing his all-world tight end. With so many young receivers they don't trust, they had to go get Emmanuel Sanders at the trading deadline in the toughest division in football with the most brutal gauntlet of a schedule the last 2 months, and he completed 69% of his throws and has the eighth best passer rating in football. Okay, there's your stat. Their schedule was brutal. The Packers' schedule was Cupcake City. Kansas City got schedule breaks, not San Francisco. It was brutal at the end of the year. By the way, Kyle Shanahan, we all admit, you're all saying this. Oh, Kyle Shanahan's the reason they're winning. He's 4-20 without Jimmy Garoppolo. He's 21-5 with him in San Francisco. Colin, that's not fair. What coach can win without their star quarterback? I don't know. The Saints went 5-0 without Drew Brees this year. The Eagles won a Super Bowl when Carson Wentz got hurt. Belichick went 11-5 without Tom Brady, and the Steelers, on their fourth quarterback this year, were in a playoff hunt week 16 and 17, went 8-8. Carolina without Cam was spitballing it for about week 12. You can win in this league with backups. You just can't win Super Bowls generally, but you can win with backups. Kyle Shanahan is a brilliant coach. 4-20 without Jimmy Garoppolo. What are you not seeing? I got down this rabbit hole last night with somebody, and he's, oh, Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is a talented kid, but he's defined by shrinking in big spots. Will he beat New Orleans? Yeah, even a crappy real estate agent can sell a nice house occasionally. We define Kirk Cousins by he kind of shrinks in big spots. Doesn't mean he can't win an occasional one. I want you to think about, remember, the Vikings were 13-3 with Case Keenum. You can make the argument that Kirk Cousins, it's about the coach, the receivers, the roster, the defense. They were 13-3 before Kirk Cousins got to town. Okay, San Francisco, in the 3 years before Garoppolo, two of those with Shanahan were 8-35. I don't know. Like, listen, they say studies have shown that 10 to 15% of people don't get sarcasm. They don't even get sarcasm. So I don't think it's crazy to think that 50% of the public can't figure out if a quarterback has it or not. But I can remember when it's not just about winning. I remember when Tebow went on a winning streak and I worked at the other place. And I would go on the air and be like, are you people crazy? This is not a franchise quarterback. I remember when Vince Young won, and I told people, are you people crazy? You can't win 15 years with Vince Young at quarterback. I remember watching Russell Wilson win his second year and going, oh, crap, we got another great quarterback. I don't think it's that hard. If you just go to wins, that's a little bit of a barometer, but you can't do it solely on wins because Tebow won and Vince Young won. Mark Sanchez won games. But I don't understand the Garoppolo stuff. Did people not watch the middle of the season? Okay, so San Francisco in the middle of the season lost both of their tackles, their Pro Bowl tackles. They lost Kittle. They had injured receivers. They lost Quan Alexander. D. Ford, they lost multiple people. They lost their Pro Bowl fullback. Garoppolo had to carry them. And by the way, if you forget how tough their schedule was, I think people are forgetting how tough their schedule was. The last 8 games, here is who San Francisco faced. The Packers twice, Baltimore, New Orleans, the surging Falcons, Minnesota, Seattle, and a Rams team fighting for their playoff life. And Garoppolo completed 69% of his throws against that. That's the toughest 8-game stretch in the National Football League. What is everybody not seeing? Trent Dilfer yesterday on Jimmy G.
You go back to the middle of the football season, Jimmy G is the reason they won football games. They didn't win despite him. So just because he didn't have flashy numbers doesn't minimize his impact on the 49ers season. When you judge a quarterback, you don't just judge it for a couple games. You look at the entirety of the season. I think he's really had a great year, and he's the right quarterback for this team.
Yeah, I read these comments on, is it because he's good-looking? Just because he's got a great coach? Oh, legendary quarterbacks have great coaches. What did Joe Montana do without Bill Walsh? What did Bradshaw do without Chuck Knoll? What did Aikman do without Jimmy Johnson? Won a Super Bowl one with Barry Switzer and probably wanted to strangle him the whole time. What did Dan Fouts do without Air Coryell? You don't think Andy Reid helps Patrick Mahomes? Of course coaches matter. But if you can't spot Jimmy G's talent, you're the person that watched American Idol and sat there with somebody with a bad voice and were like, I don't know, sounds like a superstar to me. Some people just can't see it. I don't think it's that hard. Let me shift to this. I like the Niners to win the Super Bowl. I think it's close. I think it's exciting. And I do think the lead up to the Super Bowl, I think they played a much tougher schedule at the end of the year, San Francisco. Both teams are healthy. I like the fact they're coming in as an underdog. I like their defensive line better than Kansas City's D-line, and I actually like their offensive line better than Kansas City's offensive line. Obviously, Mahomes is a superstar. Jimmy Garoppolo is super talented. He's not Patrick Mahomes, but he's really talented. But the discussion is, and I think this does matter, when you have two teams that are both great, and they're both really, really good. I mean, nobody's going to be surprised if the Niners win or if Kansas City wins. I like San Francisco by an inch. That's how much I like him. And again, it's mostly on line play, not on anything else. I feel I get a good enough quarterback and a great coach, and I have a big edge on the D-line and actually a slight edge on the O-line for San Francisco. But here's the other thing that I think can matter. I think teams do occasionally get tight. The pressure's on Kansas City, not because they're a favorite. Ask yourself this. What are the headlines the day after the Super Bowl if San Francisco loses? So let's create a headline. San Francisco loses to Kansas City. Here's the headline. Jimmy Garoppolo, no, but the future's still bright. Jimmy G's young. Shanahan's young. Outside of Joe Staley, Richard Sherman, the team's young. The defensive line's all 25 years old and younger. George Kittle's young. It's a bunch of kids. This is the beginning of a rebuild in San Francisco that finally got the quarterback. This is a young roster. Again, outside of Richard Sherman and Joe Staley, Emmanuel Sanders, this story, they've already paid their quarterback. They've already paid their quarterback. They don't have to worry about that. Now here's the headline. if Kansas City loses. Read it and weep. Andy Reid couldn't win the big game. What's going to happen now? We're paying Mahomes $44 million a year. You know, some of those veteran players we just can't afford anymore. Told you this wouldn't work. Andy doesn't develop running games. What are the headlines after this game? Narratives will start to cling to Andy and the Chiefs. There are no narratives here. There are no narratives. I mean, if Garoppolo loses to Patrick Mahomes, welcome to football for the next decade. Mahomes is going to beat virtually everybody. He's going to beat everybody. Even the great quarterbacks he's going to mostly beat. Even Travis Kelce, after the win, talked about the narratives that are on the Chiefs.
I love Coach Reid, man. He's definitely a part of the motivation. You know, we're sick of hearing what the media says about him, how he can't get the big one done. And you know what? We knocked one off the list, got the Lamar Hunt trophy back here in Kansas City for the Hunt family. And you know what? We still got one more goal to knock off the list.
I do think when you wait 2 weeks for a game, you can come in tight. And I do think the pressure is more on Kansas City, may not decide the game. But when people are asking, and I'm reading and I'm hearing, you know, who's got a little feel where this is going to be a little tight? I think San Francisco can come in here with house money, play their butt off. They got three veteran guys. They paid their quarterback. Shanahan, Garoppolo are here forever. Young receivers are here forever. Kittle, if he can stay healthy, is here forever. The right tackle here forever. The young corner, Witherspoon, here forever. I think it's a different vibe leading up for San Francisco than I do Kansas City.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So Kobe Bryant said something yesterday. I watched the Lakers last night. AD didn't play. Boston was hot. LeBron struggled. They got the you-know-what kicked out of them. It happens. It's the NBA. It was Boston's night at home. Lakers, LeBron went and saw his son play earlier in the day. Maybe not focused. Who knows? LeBron had a rare night where he stunk. I mean, by LeBron standards, not by anybody else's standards. He had 13 assists and about 15 points. Kobe Bryant was talking about LeBron James the other day, and there's this sense, and I do think Kobe sometimes rolls his eyes at LeBron's race to social media. He grew up in a different generation, and I do think LeBron kind of looks at Kobe and thinks, I'm better than you, even though people like you here more. I don't think they're ever going to be best friends, but Kobe came out and said, you know, when LeBron came to L.A., he's now a Laker. He's part of a brotherhood, part of our fraternity. We should embrace him, appreciate this guy, celebrate what he's done because it's truly remarkable. Here's what's funny. I live in Los Angeles. LeBron doesn't feel like a Laker. Kobe does, and Magic and Kareem and Riley. And LeBron feels like the new NBA, which is he moved here for business and basketball decisions, but he doesn't feel like a Miami Heat. He feels like a Cavalier. When I think of the Lakers, I think of their announcer, Chick Hearn, the late Chick Hearn. I think of Kobe. I think of Magic. I think of James Worthy. I think of Jerry West. I think of Gail Goodrich. I don't think of LeBron. He came here for business. Part of his business was basketball. That is not a downside. But I don't think Kevin Durant feels like a Warrior. Rick Barry does. Steph does. Clay does. The NBA, and I got into this conversation the other day with a friend, and he asked, why are the NBA ratings down? I like the NBA, and I said, so do I. The players are good guys. I said, but it's different. The NFL does a very good job to create a sense of community. The franchise tag. NFL owners did that because even if you're a great quarterback and your contract is done, I can keep you around for a couple years. It's a sense that Mahomes, he's not a great quarterback, he's a Chief. And Aaron's a Packer, and Ben's a Steeler, and Rivers was a Charger, and Breeze is a Saint. And they don't even come up. The NBA empowers the individual. It is more of a me league over a we league, and I have supported all NBA stars. I've moved around. I would be an utter, complete hypocrite to not defend professional mobility. The downside to it is you sometimes feel disengaged when you move around for better jobs in your life. And I don't think LeBron feels like a Laker. I think he feels like a really talented superstar basketball player that currently lives and plays in Los Angeles. I think it's one of the strengths in the NFL where people are loyal to brands. There are multiple great brands. The Bears are a great brand. The Packers are a great brand. The Cowboys, the Eagles, the Saints. There's great branding. In the NBA, Lakers are a big brand, kind of the Celtics. And then it's about the dude, the star, who is always ready to pack his bags. That's why you have a handful of NBA players who are absurdly rich. And most NFL guys, Mahomes will be very rare, hit the lottery. Look at the Lakers today, though. Frank Vogel, LeBron, Danny Green, AD, Rondo. It doesn't feel like Lakers. It feels like rented parts. You cross your fingers, hope they're healthy late, and win a title. It's not a knock on the current players. It is a reality of the current NBA business model. It doesn't feel like community. It feels like the empowerment of individual stars. They get rich. I'm not sure, big picture, it helps the sport.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Now, I haven't talked to Danny Cannell in a while. Played in the NFL for 6 years. He and I disagree a lot, but I always find him to be fascinating. He was on First Things First this morning. He's terrific. Joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Okay, I'm tired of defending Jimmy G. Kyle Shanahan was 4-20 without him, and he's 21-5 with him. I don't think he's Favre. I don't think he's Mahomes, but I do think he's a notch above a Dak and a Kirk Cousins. What say you?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate assessment. He's not a greatest of all time yet. Those two guys you mentioned him, I think, are in that conversation for top 10 quarterbacks in the history of the game. But I don't really get the criticism of Jimmy Garoppolo going into this game. I guess I understand because he was only asked to throw it 8 times in the NFC Championship game. But why is it a knock against him if in the playoffs his team is able to completely dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides and they have the luxury of not relying on their quarterback to have to throw it 40 times? I think that's a good problem to have. But what I've seen from Jimmy Garoppolo, 3 times this season, he's been over 300 yards passing. Twice of those came against the Arizona Cardinals. I would throw those aside. But his most impressive performance is the game that he had against New Orleans Saints. That was, you know, two of the top teams in the NFC were squaring off. He's going against a Hall of Famer and Drew Brees. He had to go into a hostile environment against a really good Saints defense. And what'd he do? He went toe-to-toe with the Hall of Famer and put up 48 points and beat him, by the way.
Yeah.
But most impressive, more than the 4 touchdowns and the 1 interception, Colin, was the last drive of the game when he stepped on the field. If you watched him, he looked like he belonged. And he was not overwhelmed by the moment. Instead, he was cool, calm, drove his team right down the field for the win. I think he's more than capable of winning this game for the 49ers.
You know, it's interesting. I want to talk. I'm going to get to Kansas City in a second, but it's interesting. I think the Green Bay Packers, listen, Tennessee loses and we're all like, I get it. Baltimore lost in the playoffs and we're like, okay, they're young. New England loses. We're like, well, they're old. Green Bay loses. I still don't know if Matt LaFleur is great. Offensive numbers came down for McCarthy, but I think you and I may agree on this. Aaron Rodgers generally avoids criticism. The State Farm commercials, the good looks, the ring. I said yesterday, I think Aaron's a bailer. I think he bails on plays, bails on teammates, bails on throws, bailed on a coach. His road record is abysmal compared to his contemporaries, and I think some of it is the road is hard. That's why Russell Wilson's a great road quarterback. He is just a fighter to the last play. Is my criticism unfair of Aaron?
No, I don't think it is. I am on board with you on this one. And at 36 years old, I think Aaron Rodgers has to do some self-evaluation and look at his, not his style of play, because he's insanely talented. He can still make all the throws, but in his style of leadership. And I think Aaron Rodgers, you've heard some rumblings from his teammates. Some guys have defended him, and that's great. But you have heard some teammates say, well, you know, that's the smartest guy in the room, and he's not afraid to let you know it, and it's never Aaron's fault. And I thought on full display, when adversity strikes, that's when you, as a franchise quarterback and somebody who is considered one of the best to ever play, that's when you have to inspire your teammates. And it's not fun, but that is your job. And for Aaron Rodgers to pretty much have an attitude of indifference throughout the first half and the body language, and I'm not a huge body language guy, but it can permeate on the sideline. And by the time he got his game turned around, it was too late. And I saw the play where he fumbled the snap and he walked away from it. Did not even make one iota of effort towards the ball. Didn't even yell at anybody to alert his lineman that the ball was on the ground. I was astounded. I'm like, that's the way a quarterback reacts in practice, not in the NFC Championship game. And I was catching a little bit of heat of it from some critics saying, no, there was no chance he got the ball. And I was with Trent Green and Steve Berline, two guys who played a long time in the NFL. And I said, am I crazy on this? Or should Aaron at least have dove and tried to get on the ball? And they were like, absolutely. And even if you don't have a chance to get on the ball, at least you show your teammates, I'm willing to sacrifice and do whatever it takes to win. So I thought that was a really negative message. Kind of the body language, the lack of effort, the indifference was an alarming sign for Aaron Rodgers. And I think he needs to do some self-reflection or he'll be the most underutilized piece of talent that's ever played the quarterback position with only one Super Bowl to show for it.
It's interesting. I've known people through the years that have a relationship with Aaron, and he'll just ghost you if you push back and criticize him. He doesn't like discomfort. He can be passive-aggressive. It's his personality. He'll drop you as a friend if you criticize him, and I think that creates sort of an aloofness and a shield around him, and I've been saying this for years. I don't doubt he's a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a great leader. I think Russell Wilson is, and I think his lack of leadership for Aaron is starting to show in his road record where it's really hard to win. Okay, let's go to Kansas City. We got about 3 minutes left. Do you sense, though, Mahomes and Reed, it feels like there is a little pressure, the Andy Reed can't win narrative. The Mahomes is the best of the two quarterbacks. They've got the pressure on them, right?
Yeah, it's not even close. I mean, when you hear Travis Kelce after the NFC Championship game reference Andy Reid's playoff history and the knock against him, they are aware of what it would mean for Andy Reid to win a Super Bowl. So I do think it is firmly there. I mean, Kyle Shanahan's still a baby in the coaching circles. You know, he's got a young quarterback too. Him and John Lynch have this contract. They're going to be together. I think they expect they're going to be back. And so do the Chiefs. But for Andy Reid specifically, look at what it would do for his resume, his Hall of Fame legacy. If he wins this Super Bowl, I think he's a lock to get in the Hall of Fame. If he comes up short, it's a much longer road for him to get in. And he'd probably have to coach another 10 years and add to the total win total. So that's where I think it's of massive importance for them to win. I have a take for you that I think you might like, because I think the Kansas City Chiefs are similar to the Golden State Warriors when they started their dynasty. They're a young team. I think Patrick Mahomes is similar to Steph Curry, the way he's changing the way the game is played. They're fun. They're incredibly an offensive juggernaut, and yet they're better defensively than people give them credit for. And they will make some mistakes, which the Warriors did earlier and throughout. While they're embarrassing people, they'll have turnovers, and they always had the confidence they could win.
Yeah.
And similar to the Warriors, I do think the Chiefs are about to go on a run where they get multiple Super Bowls.
Yeah, no, Danny, I think you're right. I think the Warriors take is one that we've talked about. Mahomes feels like he's kind of changing the parameters on what a quarterback can do. I mean, I liked Andrew Luck. He didn't look like this. Good stuff, Danny Cannell. Love having you on the show, buddy. Thanks. Anytime you want to come on, just tell us.
All right, next time I want to do it in L.A., though.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I've been very critical of Aaron Rodgers. They're cheeseheads. They, you know, middle of the country, you're mean, you're a coastal guy, you hate Aaron. No, I don't. I think Aaron can be condescending. I think Danny Cannell points out what I point out. I don't think he's a great leader. I think he's a great player. He's Jay Cutler with way more talent. He doesn't get along with all his teammates. Condescending, aloof, and I think he's a bailer as a person. He bails on friends, he bails on teammates, he bails on coaches, he bails on plays. And I think, but here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers. Are we sure Matt LaFleur can coach? Tennessee's offense got better without him. Now you can say that's Ryan Tannehill. Green Bay's got slightly worse with him. Well, it's a new system. Even though I disagree in both cases, I'll just give you those. Here's what concerns me. Green Bay was a lousy second-half offense. With Aaron Rodgers, they were 26th in the league in fourth-quarter scoring. And they were in a bunch of close games. They needed points. They were 13th in second-half scoring. 26th in the fourth. Seattle down three offensive linemen and three running backs. I mean, Seattle was on a third string center, outscored him 20-7 at Lambeau. So is that not concerning? Aaron Rodgers was outgained this year. What? They didn't have a tough schedule. And they played several awful defenses. They got a ton of yards on the lousy Cowboy defense, a ton of yards on the lousy Raider defense. They got a lot of yards on a Kansas City defense at the time that was all banged up. Isn't that concerning? Here's what I worry about Matt LaFleur. So the first thing I look at when you hire a new offensive coach, do you get a pop? Sean Payton's first year in New Orleans, NFC Championship, pop. Andy Reid's first year in Kansas City, 2-14 to 11-5, pop. Now, those are legends. But a great offensive coach, Sean McVay to the Rams, pop. I got no pop from him this year. Historically, even Chip Kelly, who you criticize, Philadelphia with backup quarterbacks, you got a pop. Kyle Shanahan didn't win a lot of games, but go back to his first 2 years when he had, was it Nick Mullins? And we were all saying on the air, how's George Kittle always this open? How are they competing against anybody with Nick Mullins at quarterback? They looked clever. I got an initial schematic IQ pop. I didn't get that this year. First thing that worries me. The second thing is with great offensive coaches. They give you, all the great ones give you a pop. It's like, whoa, 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 Rams, McVay, whoa, 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 Chip Kelly, Andy Reid, Sean Payton. Matt Nagy, by the way, in Chicago, I had that written down. Remember Nagy? First year, we would go on the air regularly and say, it's a bunch of smoke and mirrors with Trubisky, but it's damn fun to watch. It doesn't look like anybody else's offense. By the way, Bruce Arians came to Tampa this year. Jameis Winston, a lot of picks, but good Lord, that offense was all sorts of dizzying throws. I got no pop. Here's the second thing. Defensive coordinators never figure out the great offensive minds. Nobody's ever figured out Andy Reid. Belichick still can't figure him out. Nobody's figured out Sean Payton. Drew Brees got hurt. I'm 5-0 with Bridgewater. Nobody's figured out Bill Walsh. Nobody figured out Kyle Shanahan. He was good at every stop. You don't figure out great offensive people because great offensive people tend to be very cerebral. They're evolvers. They're adapters. They're constantly scheming, staying ahead of defense. But here's the other part. I not only didn't get a pop from LaFleur's offense, people started figuring it out. They were a bad second half team. People figured out off the script. And in their last four games, Green Bay scored 20, 21, 23, and 20. That's with Aaron Rodgers. The offense, second halves, later in the year, people started to figure it out. So, we can blame Aaron for everything. This was a guy that went to Tennessee. They were like 23rd in the league offensively. He took over, they went to 25th. Mariota pre, Mariota with. So forget the Tannehill thing. I just saw two things this year that I think are problematic. I got no pop with Aaron Rodgers, who's a smart guy who can pick up playbooks quick. And I also think teams started figuring them out at half and figuring them out, Green Bay, in the second, third, fourth quadrant of the season. So I think it's, I don't know if he's the right guy. I just don't know. I think they had a very easy schedule this year and got a ton of breaks with their health and their schedule.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Senior reporter, lead content guy for the Monday Morning Quarterback, Albert Breer, joining me via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So, Albert, you know, this whole Tom Brady thing, I'm over discussing when he retires, but I do think the transition potentially of moving, I didn't buy into it initially. I just can't see Giselle saying, yeah, let's move the family to Indianapolis. But I read a story this weekend from a Boston reporter at NBC that said Tom is kind of over being the 13th highest paid quarterback in the league. He sacrificed a lot. And that's the kind of thing where I have seen even athletes I love and respect, yeah, there is a respect card on the money. That made me think this thing is real with Tom. What did you make of that story?
Well, you use the right word, Colin. The word is respect. This isn't about money. It's about respect. And I take it back to what happened in July when they gave him that pay bump. Really the problem there, the reason Brady was upset coming out of that negotiation, it wasn't about money, it was about years. He wanted them to get him to the end of his career and ensure that he would finish his career with the Patriots. And for the first time, the wording you heard coming out of ownership was uncharted territory. Now, that sounds logical to me and you, but if you've given an organization 20 years, how are you going to read that? Like, you're going to say to yourself, well, wait a second. I just gave you 2 decades. I add how much value to your franchise? I put 6 Lombardi trophies in your trophy case. And now you're talking about me creating uncharted territory for you. So I think that there's a respect thing here that I think was, you know, part of it in the summer, and certainly as a result is a part of it now. And if they're not going to give them the years, then it's going to have to be made up for with money. And look, like I've said this to you a few times, Colin, he enables everything about their program. The fact that they can coach him hard enables them to coach everybody else hard. The fact that he's taken less money in the past enables them to ask others to take less money. All of this stuff is sort of part of the 20-year relationship between the Patriots and Brady. And I think when things broke down over the summer, it sort of got Brady to look at it and say, well, wait a second, this is a two-way street.
Let me throw this at you. Let's say he looks around. He doesn't want to move to Indy. Chargers move on and draft Tua or Justin Herbert. And you look around, he doesn't want to live in he's above Tampa or Jacksonville. Would there be the potential that Tom looks around, he doesn't get the money or the years from New England, the teams, the Carolinas, the Chargers, they move on and draft people, and Tom just said, you know what, I'm out. Is there any chance of that? Like, I'm done. I'm 43. I've got my money. I'm not playing for that dollar figure.
I don't think it's his intention now to retire. I will say that. Do I think that there's the potential that he looks at, you know, his options, doesn't like them, and maybe decides to hang it up? I think that's possible. I mean, there's been a couple of things that he said. He said he doesn't want to suck, right? Like, so if he feels like he's losing it, then I think he'd be comfortable walking away. And I don't think he wants to be in a situation where he's with a team that isn't going to be competing at the highest level. And so I do think that there are a couple of boxes that need to be checked. One, of course, is feeling that he can continue to play. I think that box is already checked. And then the other part of it is finding a winning situation for himself. And Colin, the one thing I would point out here that I think is sort of an important piece, you know, you talk about the real estate where he's going to live and everything else. He has a kid who lives in New York. His son, Jack, lives in New York City. And I think ultimately because of that, because Giselle likes New York City, that's eventually going to be where they're going to settle. So let's just put this in real life terms for you, right? Say you didn't know where you were going to work over the next year, but you did know where your family is going to be for the next 20 years. What would you do with your family? You'd probably move them to where they were going to be for the next 20 years and say, you know what? I'm going to be the one who's going to move around over the next year or two while I continue to work. And so I think there's certainly a chance that Brady says with his family, we're going to put you in the New York area for right now, and I'm going to go where I need to go work-wise. And I certainly think some of the teams that you mentioned there could be on the table, the Chargers, the Titans, with the relationship with Mike Vrabel. I think there are some winning situations out there, but I don't think he's just going to go somewhere to go somewhere.
By the way, I want to throw you were in this living, breathing situation with Jimmy Garoppolo. This is not a surprise. Take us back to when we know why, you know, Tom wanted him out and he wanted more years and Garoppolo wanted to play. But watching Garoppolo now, this is what Bill Belichick saw, I imagine.
Yeah, and you know, I'll take it back to 2017 and the combine in Indianapolis in February. Kyle Shanahan and Bill Belichick sat down and they were talking about a number of different things as coaches do during the combine, things that might happen in free agency and the draft. And Jimmy's name came up and Bill stopped Kyle and said, non-starter, he's not on the table, we're not moving him. Fast forward 8 months, the Niners, I believe at this point, were 0-8, 0-9. And they were coming off a really bad loss to Philadelphia Eagles. Kyle is driving into the office in California. It's 5 a.m. He gets a text from Bill Belichick, says, call me when you get in. He calls Belichick, and Belichick says, here's the deal. I don't want to negotiate. I don't want to talk about it. You can have Jimmy for a second-round pick. Kyle almost drops the phone. Kyle then walks into John Lynch's office, says to Lynch, the only concern I have is that he's not signed beyond this year, so this might create a little bit of an unstable situation at quarterback. Lynch responds, that's what the franchise tag is for. He goes back and calls Belichick, and the deal is done. And so the big question you have then is, how did he go from untradeable in February to all of a sudden being moved for a second-round pick in October, particularly when I was told that the Cleveland Browns were willing to move the pick they got from the Houston Texans, which wound up being 4th overall, for Garoppolo. And to me, the easiest answer, Bill Belichick wanted to do right by Jimmy Garoppolo and put him in a place where he thought he could succeed. He's got tremendous respect for Kyle Shanahan. And I also think that Bill Belichick looks at Jimmy Garoppolo's development as part of his legacy. So by putting him in San Francisco and making him look good, it would look make Belichick look like the winner in that whole situation.
Boy, that was a great story. I love stories like that. I like hearing about – that's like a mob story where somebody gets called on the phone in the car on the way to work and big stuff happens. I love that. Albert Breer. I want to ask you about this. Andy Reid is one of my favorite coaches ever. But there is a sense with me that there's narratives if they lost that would come down hard on Andy Reid. He's given Belichick problems. He's had B to B minus quarterbacks and gotten out of two Super Bowls. I think Mahomes is obviously the best he's ever had. When you look at Andy Reid, when you talk to people around the league, you do more than I do. I think they're rooting for Andy. I think coaches around the league are rooting for Andy. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, he gets tremendous respect around the league. Like, obviously, the first part of it is how great he's been as a coach over the years. But there's a second piece to this, too, in what he's given to the profession. And if you look at his tree and the people who've come out of his tree and succeeded, guys like John Harbaugh and Ron Rivera, he's not only a great coach, he's been a great developer of coaches. And you've seen executives come out of the Eagles front office, now the Chiefs front office. You see Chris Ballard, the success that he's having in Indianapolis. And so there's almost like this professional development area that Andy Reid's excelled in beyond just the success in the football field. And so there are a lot of Andy's people out there across the league. And even people who haven't worked with Andy have a tremendous respect, not just what he's done as a coach, but also what he's done for the business of football. And so I think that's why you've got so many people out there rooting for Andy Reid. The crazy thing about it, Colin, is, you know, you mentioned sort of his record and everything else. The guy is elite in just about every area. There's one hole. It's game management. He's elite at developing quarterbacks. He's elite at calling plays. He's elite at designing an offense. He's elite at putting together a team. He's elite at setting up an organization. And there's just, for whatever reason, been this one hole in game management. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the Super Bowl. If that gets tested and he can pass that test, maybe he can finally plug that one hole in his resume.